This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are tuned into Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Rich Bradbury. I've got a full house today. In front of me, I've got Arvind. Say hello, Arvind.
Hello, hello.
On the right here is Audrey.
Hello.
And over on the left, we have Christine, who's sat very quietly here in the studio with us, observing.
Yes. Right?
Making sure we don't make any mistakes.
Yes.
But we might do.
We might.
Today we might. Today's a bit of a free-for-all, right?
It is. Or a free-fall.
Or free-fall. One way or... You're making jokes about my parachute already. I was going to use that a little bit later on. Right, today's stories, we've got stuff about becoming a billionaire and then being knocked off the top pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff about working from home. A little bit about Theresa May and her attacks on the internet. The hidden challenges of invisible disabilities. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff that Apple are coming out with over at WWDC. For that, though, Audrey.
Yes.
Tell us about what's going off at the top of the billionaires' table.
Yes, I know. These people, the cream of the crop, apparently. The people who never have to work, or their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren, if you think about it, right?
We're not jealous at all, are we?
No, we are not. This story just came out of Huffington Post. It says that Bill Gates may soon lose his spot as the world's richest person.
Uh-oh.
So now, if you weren't already clued into this, Bill Gates has been at the top of the Forbes richest list for, what, about 23 years?
Something ridiculous,
he's
right?
been a billionaire since he was 31, and this was... he's 61 right now.
What?
Yeah, he's 61 right now. So that's 30 years that he's been a billionaire.
Oh, my word.
And he's been at the top for about 23 years, 18 of which as... number one.
As number one.
Yeah, or somewhere at the top, right?
You think he remembers what it's like to not be a billionaire?
I bet he has no idea.
Yeah, no idea.
No idea.
Most of his adult life, you know, if you think
about
it.
He has been a billionaire.
Mm.
So, okay, so if now, he's no longer at the top.
Yeah, he may no longer be at the top, you know, for
speculative.
Long. Yes. Mm. So Amazon founder Jeff Bezos is on the cusp of overtaking him. This, of course, thanks to the strong performance of Amazon stock in recent months and the comparatively smaller gains of Gates Microsoft during the same period.
Was just looking at some of the Amazon stocks and looking at the market today. So last month, it was $850 a share.
This was in March.
This was in March, right?
Yes.
And now it's around about what? Over $1,000.
It's over $1,000 per share. Mm-hmm. So basically, in the space of this year, just in 2017 alone, Bezos has added more than $20 billion to his net worth. So this has helped him jump. So at the beginning of the year, he was in third place.
Mm.
And now he's in second place. He's overtaken Warren Buffett already.
Wow.
And he's aiming for the top spot. And he could get there if... We just have to watch Amazon stocks, and you could get there anytime.
So we're looking at they have a market value of about $160 billion, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the stuff that we were talking about before. We said, you know, people like Mark Zuckerberg, obviously Jeff Bezos, are people that we recognize,
yes.
You know, because they're in this world of tech and they're communicating with us every day, and we're seeing them in the news and one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
But at the top, there's some guy that I'd never heard of in second or third place, right?
Well, I think you're talking about Spanish businessman Amancio Ortega.
Yes.
He is the co-founder of Zara, where most of my money goes to.
I'm glad you're honest.
And if you don't already know, Zara is actually the world's largest fashion retailer. This is something I just found out today.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
How much do you spend on Zara to make him the richest man?
Arvind, certain questions you shouldn't ask me on air. Not when my husband can listen to this. So he's approximately worth about $85.9 billion, and so that's he's even overtaken Warren Buffett too. Warren Buffett is at about $74-75 billion at
I'm
the
guessing
moment.
Warren Buffett has been on this list for like 90 years or something.
Something. Like
right. 125.
Yeah. Do these people ever age? Well, I mean, they get older. They just don't disappear, do they?
You know, it's funny you should say that about not knowing some of the names on that list, because if you Google certain estimates of who's going to be the richest person in the next 30 years, it's actually none of these people.
Right.
The estimate will be someone from China.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we know what industry? I mean...
No, but I think with the way the e-commerce is going and all there, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I mean, it's interesting when we're looking through that list, right? I mean, most of the things in the top 10 or top 20 even
software
tech-related.
Tech-related, and then you've got Amancio Ortega.
Comes up there
Mr.
with his...
Zara. So, you know, since we're talking about all these men in the top five, I just wanted to look out for, like, the wealthiest woman in the world. And for the second year running, it is Frances Lillian Betancourt. She is the cosmetics heiress, and her fortune is worth $39.5 billion. So she's at number 14 on the list.
Right.
Yeah, which is like not really there. And well, one interesting thing to note is that the majority of richest women in the world actually inherited their money.
Well, I was just going to say, shouldn't Bill Gates' wife technically be at number two on
somewhere,
the list?
Somewhere there.
All right. Speculative anyway. Moving on then. We have another story moving on to working from home and how it can actually hurt your career. We've heard these stories about how it's supposed to be the best way to do
it's
things.
It's supposed to be the thing that everyone's aiming for, right?
Yeah.
So I picked up this story from BBC. For some reason, both my stories today are from the BBC. So you know how a lot of companies, they talk about co-working spaces, they talk about sending their people to work from home.
Yeah.
It seems to be the more economical thing to do for the future, right? But there was this study that was recently published by Esther Canonico, I like the name, for her PhD thesis from the London School of Economics and Political Science. She did this with 514 workers. Nearly half of the 514 people she studied either work from home full-time or had some kind of flexibility, right? Mm. And they all admit that it's a lot harder than you think it is.
Right.
Yeah, so here's a personal story. Like, I've done this before. I tried to do freelancing and stuff, working from home. It is very, very tough.
Why?
Because of distractions.
Right.
Because you cannot time yourself. You have no one looking over your shoulder or no one managing you. I don't want someone looking over my shoulder. But there's no... you don't get a sense of time. And there's, like, a bunch of distractions that come. The dog pops up in your room.
Right.
And then you're playing with the dog for half an hour.
Yeah.
And then the TV show pops up. And then you might Netflix in between.
You might. Like there's no wonder.
Like when you're shifting through your tabs, you might go like, "Hey, it's Netflix," and then you you start watching like a dozen shows.
Right.
That has never happened to me. Netflix.
It seems to be the same.
Never happened.
Never happened to me. I have excellent time management. I don't know.
So you purposely Netflix.
That's true.
It's within working hours.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right though. I mean, the whole thing that I was reading about was that for those people that want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no kind of, and it sounds really strange because you're going from like this locked office corporate thing to essentially being as free as you want, right?
Yeah.
But that transition from one way of living and working to another, there's no way of telling you how to do that.
No. You know,
there's nobody to say you need to lock yourself in a room, maintain office hours, mm-hmm. and stay focused for that period, and lock your dog or cat out of the room during that period. You know, you just think, I can be myself at home, and really, you can't, can you?
But
no.
Those are the main reasons why you'd want to work from home in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you've got kids to take care of, an elderly parent or grandparent that you need to care for. You just can't leave the confines of home to be at work.
Right.
But then what happens is the work takes second place.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. It never takes first place if you're working from home because it's not an office.
Ah.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that they've listed, like the bunch of, like the biggest problems are that sometimes companies think that everyone can do all aspects of their job from home, and you can't. You need to be in the office to communicate. Training can make a difference, which they cannot get at home. And interruptions, like I said before, a plumber might show up. You might go to cook lunch.
The plumber never shows up on
time. The plumber might show up.
When you know that, you, whether you're calling a telco company, we'll be there between 9 and 5.
Yeah.
Well, that's not helpful.
So you won't have the time, 9 to 5. And all of a sudden, when you just sit down to do your work, then the plumber shows up.
That's right.
And he's there for 2 hours.
That's right.
So I was just thinking back to that time when we did the story on BizBytes on IBM and how they're actually bringing back thousands of employees from working from home. They're actually bringing them back into co-located office, I think that's what it's called.
What does that mean?
Yeah, so basically everyone who's been working remotely, and IBM has been doing this, they were the pioneers of allowing employees to work remotely, right? They've been doing it since the 80s and the 90s. They say it worked well then, but not for 2015 to 2016, 2017. This is not the way you have to work right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought in like more than 6,000 employees from like different states, bringing them back into the office. Mm. And that caused a big uproar.
You see, it worked back then because there were no Twitter, there was no Instagram, there was no Facebook.
Yep.
Right? That's why it worked. So now we have all these distractions, like Audrey never accidentally getting onto Netflix. You may accidentally check your Facebook every 20
minutes.
I might
stumble upon Facebook.
Because, you might. Yeah.
Because back then they said that, you know, remote working actually increased productivity.
Right.
You know, if you're at home and you're happy, of course you're going to want to work for your company and you're going to want to put in more effort and you can take your time to do things like that. But they say today what you need is innovation and that you can productivity can take a back step in order to create more innovation. And that happens with FaceTime with colleagues and like team proximity. And that also helps to foster better ideas. You know, when you meet people and you have random conversations about, you know, watching American Gods, I don't know. So you come up with great ideas that way. It's called the water cooler effect, and that's what they're hoping to bring back into IBM.
Right, right. Okay. And I suppose when you're working from home, you've also got that whole fear of missing out kind of stuff as well.
You know? Missing out, that's exactly what it says. It says that people might not feel your presence in the office, and that communication might be broken, and sometimes the boss even forgets that you exist. So a lot of opportunities.
That's happened to me before.
Even when you're in the office.
That could be
moving
a good
on.
Thing.
All right, if you've got any, if you want to get in touch with us about the show, do get in touch via Twitter at BFM Radio. We'll be back after this track. We've got some more news and stuff coming up in a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. You're on BizBytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bulletins for managers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and this
Arvind Yuvraj.
And this
Audrey Raj.
Young lady over here. Didn't you get my name wrong last week?
No, that wasn't me. That was Arvind.
That was Arvind, right. Yeah. Okay.
Rich Cadbury.
That's the one. Oh, he went there.
He went there.
He did it.
Went there.
Arvind, I've got it in for you later on. Right, okay. Moving away from billionaires and working from home. So you may or may not know that in the UK there's a general election coming up on Thursday. And for the first time in a while, the Conservatives are actually getting some real challenge from Jeremy Corbyn of the Labour Party, despite what people have said about him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Theresa May has come out very strongly, and this is a quote from her, actually, where she said, "Some people say that it's not for government to regulate when it comes to technology and the internet. We disagree." Right. Mm. If you have been watching any of the new season of House of Cards, some of this may seem quite familiar, you know, not just the regulation of the internet, but how things are in politics have become so reactionary across the board, particularly in the UK. You know, so what she's saying is that this is all due to public concerns. The public are concerned about how the internet is helping some of these terrorists to find dark corners and hide in these dark corners of the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure that I agree.
Not convinced either.
Right.
Yeah, no.
So, come on, tell me why you're not convinced.
Because I think they want tighter controls. They want to try and clamp down on these terrorist acts. And they recognize that the internet is a space for, these terrorist groups and people who mean harm to actually connect with each other and gain traction.
Right.
And then, of course, to publicize what they're doing. You see all those videos of beheadings over the past few years. I'm glad we don't see more of them today. But the reason why it's on the internet, the reason why it was on television is to incite
hysteria.
And fear, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we don't want to give them that opportunity. We don't want to give them that space. You know, the media should be used for good.
Mm. Arvind.
That means, so you're saying that they shouldn't, I'm not saying any specific governments, but anyone shouldn't have a control on the internet.
Well, I'm saying, I don't think that they're doing it for the people. It's not the people who are concerned. I think the government wants to try and regulate the internet just to try and clamp down on these terrorist activities. That's what I think.
No, I don't think anyone should have any kind of regulations on the internet. It's free for now. I know a lot of people have tried to commercialize it. They've tried to control it. They've tried to clamp down on it because they don't want the spread of information. I don't think clamping down is the way to go, because no matter how much you clamp down on something, as we've seen with the piracy problem, they will creep up again.
Right.
I don't know, logically, I mean, long story short, it's about having better technology to fight inferior technology.
I agree with that. But what she's saying is that, you know, it's the internet companies who are helping to provide this extremist ideology. Like I said at the top, you know, giving people places to hide.
Yeah.
Google, in fact, these are companies she's named. Google, Apple, Facebook, and Microsoft, and many other services have created these, and it's the encrypted channels that she is saying, you know, that are hiding people. Stuff like WhatsApp and even, what's the other one? Mail.
WeChat?
WeChat, you can. Now, WeChat's, this is the thing, right? If we look at, like, we're going from the extremes of the UK and what they want to somewhere like China, who have basically said there are no restrictions. However, there are no. We are not making it so it's not encrypted.
There's no end-to-end encryption. Not allowed in China. Right,
exactly.
Right?
So the Chinese, as they want, can pop in and have a look around and make sure everything is okay. Now, the UK, though, did get a major bill passed last year in 2016, which goes under the joker's name of the Snoopers Charter. It's called the Investigatory Powers Bill, and it basically gives the UK law enforcement broad powers to hack into certain phones and look through web browsing records and kind of enforce ISPs to hold onto data for 12 months. I don't know. I think the idea of this is what, you know, people like Snowden have been talking about, you know, for years, you know. The government wants in and they will find any way of doing that. And if that means they have to create a diversion or something else to give them the effective way of saying, you know what, look what's happened. We told you this would happen if you didn't give us access. If you want to be a cynic.
Which I think is unfair, because you shouldn't leverage on something like this to get your own agenda out.
But that's politics, Arvin.
It is.
Right?
It is.
Stuff like, you know, you got Brazil, who have banned WhatsApp, in fact. China, who have, as we've just said, banned any company from putting any kind of encryption services. India are proposing required internet companies share private communication with the law enforcement. And even we talked about last week, Ethiopia. You know, and we had a bit of a joke about it, but, you know, they shut down the entire internet for the country so that kids couldn't cheat on their school exams.
Yeah,
that's true. And wasn't it Trump who wanted, like, way back before he was elected, like in 2015 or 2 years ago or something like that, who said that he wanted to close up the internet in some way?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. In some way.
In some way, of course.
As if it's just like putting your thumb into a big, like, kind of dam and saying, that's it, I've done it.
So you can block all the Twitters.
All the Twitters.
Take away all the Facebooks. Close all the Facebooks.
Close all those Facebooks. Books.
I think one of the main concerns that most tech companies have, you know, including Apple, is that how it's going to affect users' privacy. You know, any backdoor access to this data that, you know, we share on a day-to-day basis could be used by governments that the government wants, could be exploited by hackers, foreign governments who are looking to steal or do harm. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's the their main concern, I guess.
Worst case scenario would be forcing these people into an even darker space on the internet where you can't get to them.
Yeah, but what I can't understand is that all this technology that is being used by terrorists or people for all the wrong things, it was engineered and invented by someone else first.
Right.
So there is obviously a way to top that if they wanted to. If they wanted to build something to top or to circumvent this. So what I don't understand is why newer technology never comes out ahead of its time when it's already there. Because the technology that we use now is pretty much, I wouldn't say dated, but it's been invented a few years in advance.
Yeah.
And then it dwindles down into the dark web or, you know, for stuff that it shouldn't be used for.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, the humanity. Right. Time to move on. We're going to take another short break and a breather with some music coming right up. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. When we come back, the hidden challenges of invisible disability. All right. Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be financially minded. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. We have a full house today. First up is
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Over here is
Audrey Raj.
So, next story is about this idea of invisible disabilities.
It is.
It's something that an idea, or rather a phrase that we kind of band around. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with the term. We don't call it that in the UK, really. So you'd have to explain this to me, Arvind.
So I came across this on the BBC. They did like a whole piece on this. Invisible disability means disabilities that don't have any obvious physical signs.
Right.
So mental illness is an invisible disability.
Okay.
Because no one outside of yourself would know, and of course your doctor, if you've been diagnosed. So the WHO, World Health Organization, says that 1 billion people worldwide have some kind of disability. And 74% of that number, based on this US survey, don't use a wheelchair or anything else that might visually signal that they have this impairment.
So we're talking about things like depression, anxiety, OCD, PTSD, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, all of that. How this affects them at the workplace is that they don't know in which category they fall in, because they don't know what the check on the forms that they have to fill up.
Right.
The other thing is that there's a lot of stigma associated with disability at the workplace. So this piece was basically on how to curb that and why and the struggles that these people go through when applying for jobs and the impact that they face once they're in the workplace itself.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, first of all, don't call it a disability. That's number one, because that the word itself kind of has a weird connotation.
A weird negative.
Yeah. I mean, I know there's no other actual way to call it at the moment, but I was thinking if you call something a disability, like someone's unable to do something that has that already has like a negative effect, I don't know what else to call it, but this is just something that crossed my mind. There was another Canadian survey that found that 88 people with invisible disabilities had a negative view of disclosing their disability because people worry about being labeled.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially here as well. You know, you tell people that you're depressed or anything like that, and suddenly you can see,
yeah,
you know, that there's that judgment there already. You know, this person is not.
If it's not judgment, then there's also that initial disbelief, because if they can't really see it, then, you know, I've had family members who were diagnosed with anxiety and depression, and it was just like, no, what's wrong with them? Just ask them to snap out of it already.
Right.
Just because they can't see it and they just don't understand it, they don't realize when or how quickly it's progressed, they don't get it.
Right. I mean, you know, from a personal level, you know, a very close family member of mine suffered from PTSD for an awful long time, you know, and at first it's this, the person that you knew or you know, who was familiar to you and you communicated in a certain way had literally gone for a period of time, you know, you cannot communicate in the same way that you're used to and you have to find a way around that. And then when you try and discuss that with other people, they're like you say, Audrey, you know, they'll snap out of it. Everything will be okay in a couple of days' time. You know, and having this kind of stiff upper lip and lifting your chin up and moving forward that you're kind of told that you have to do, it doesn't work, you know.
Especially when you're clinically diagnosed with something,
right,
with an illness. Yeah,
right,
it's
right,
not something that you can just shake off and walk about, no?
What, right, if it's what if it's an illness like HIV? It's not something that you want to disclose as well, because people tend to change the way they look at you or work with you if you tell them that you are HIV positive. And you know, there's also a stat that says something like globally people with HIV have unemployment rates that are three times higher than national rates. So
but,
imagine
that. What I said about back in the UK as well, they have this thing called an Equality Act, which was made in 2010, which means that people like the guy you just mentioned, or the girl with HIV that you just mentioned, and people with PTSD and OCD, you know, they're actually covered at work. You know, they have various protections, and the employers are then asked to have make things called reasonable adjustments, which will help remove barriers at work. So things like different working hours, and you know, if somebody's feeling ill, you know, they can just say to their boss, look, I feel ill, and don't really have to disclose too much about it. Whereas, you know, there are places like here in Malaysia, you need an MC, you need a cert, you need to prove where you've been and what you've done and where you've spent your medication and whatever.
It's a long workaround.
It's a long workaround. And at the end of the day, you know, somebody in your establishment where you work will know what is wrong with you, you know, other than the people that you really should be telling.
And that has like an added pressure as well. That's what a lot of people said, because if they disclose that they have a disability, then they have an added pressure on themselves to perform up to a certain level, because they, it basically says that they don't want to be given additional comfort or anything like that. They just need understanding from the workplace that they are dealing with this in their life at the moment.
Right.
And they need that understanding so that people around them know if something goes wrong, or they need the time not to penalize them for it, like someone who isn't going through the same problem at the same time.
So, but how far does that understanding have to stretch? Because, so your bosses know, management knows, your team knows, but what about the other people? Because sometimes when you work in big companies, like say for a bank or a multinational, you don't just interact with just your team or the people in your department. You have to interact with people from other departments as well, and then they might think that you're slacking off just because you're not in for a couple of weeks, or you know, you've left early for a doctor's appointment. So there's that stigma as well, right?
Yeah, there's also that they don't know how much leeway to give, I guess.
Yeah, and speaking of leeway, I mean, you could argue both sides of this coin, but in the UK, there's this feeling that people are also taking advantage of this idea of invisible disabilities. I mean, as you know, in the UK, there's the NHS, and if you don't work, you get paid a certain amount of money per week, as long as you are effectively looking for work. But if the doctor says, you know, you have anxiety or you have depression or one thing or another, in these very kind of grey boxes that they tick, you are entitled to not work and receive money for doing nothing. So there's that side of the coin as well.
I know that's a growing trend in Australia as well. Right. You know, that's why more HR departments are looking into the welfare of their employees, even things like changing out their chairs, moving in standing desks as well, you know, just to help with the ergonomics of their employees, just because they don't want more people claiming, what's it called again?
You get stuff like RSI for your wrist and a few bits and pieces. And
I guess this, like I said, this goes way back to the way it was handled way before, like the word itself, disability. I know that again, it's not that the coining of the word was wrong, but there must be another way. I guess management just has to know how to hone people's skills in different departments. Everyone's good at something. You just need to know how to channel those skills in the right direction.
Yeah. There's a really nice quote at the end of the article that you found that said, it's society's barriers that are disabling people.
It is.
I like that. Mm-hmm. All right, we've got to move on. We've got some music coming up from the Beach Boys. It's called Isn't It Time? Something nice and, you know, sunny. We had Echo and the Bunnymen a moment ago. What was going on there?
Echo and the Bunnymen, what would possess anyone to name their band that?
It's a great name.
Bunnymen?
I can tell you what possessed.
Is it Easter?
Go on then.
We shouldn't say it on air. They were on something.
They were on something. All right, when we come back, we'll be talking about some of the developments at Apple's WWDC and what the iPhone will be doing about when you're driving. Some things are changing, folks. Right, you're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Barry fronts Motown. BFM 89.9.
It's a full house on Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. So far, we have talked about Bill Gates being knocked off the top spot. We spoke about working from home and how it can actually hurt your career. Theresa May and her use of tech to stop terror attacks. The hidden challenges of invisible disability so far. Final story of today. It's something out of Apple's WWDC that's been going on for the last few hours, and I suspect it's going to go on for more hours forever. Mm-hmm. And Jeff will be talking about it, I'm sure, in depth
on Thursday.
But I thought there's a little piece that has come out of it so far that I wanted to talk about, other than their Amazon copycat thingy. But we'll talk about that on Thursday. It's about
all this teasing.
Suspense, right? How iPhones will soon be able to block texts whilst you're driving. I think this is a great idea. So they're introducing this new feature that will do away with that annoying and dangerous urge to look at a text message while you're driving. It's called Do Not Disturb Whilst Driving. Right? So DNDWD. Are we going to remember that? We're not, are we?
No.
DNDWD. So whenever the phone is connected to a car using Bluetooth or a cable, or if the car is indeed moving, the phone will withhold any notifications for things like text messages and new updates and stuff. And if someone does text you while you're driving, the phone can respond with an automatic message telling them that you're driving and can't respond just now. It's a great idea.
Great idea, and something that we really need.
It is.
I mean, how many times have you been behind a car and that person is just holding up traffic or is just, you know, driving between two lanes and you overtake them or you speed past them and then you realize that they're on their phone?
It's irritating, right?
Yes, it is.
It is. I just saw this and I was wondering, I thought that this was a feature that was there like 5 years ago. I was wondering what took Apple so long. Like, it's 2017. Like, I have, one of my friends has a Honda Civic, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And there's like, it has the Bluetooth radio and stuff in the player. And if you're on the road and you're moving, you cannot connect to the Bluetooth stuff. You cannot meddle with it. You cannot connect new phones or new devices. It just says stop.
It doesn't ask if you're a passenger?
No. It doesn't give you any options. You have to pull up or you have to stop the car and then you can connect any gadgets you want to the Bluetooth.
My VW does that too. I'm not allowed to do anything with
my
system other than maybe like change my radio.
How old is your presets? Is your VW?
I don't know, about 5 years.
Yeah.
See, that's a great idea. I'm driving around in an old Myvi, and we don't have anything like that. But anyway,
not yet.
Exactly. And neither does the iPhone.
That's true. Up until just now. Nice segue there. Look at him. He's just an Android boy at heart. We know that. So this iPhone screen will also be locked to prevent drivers from using many of the apps whilst driving, and passengers who are just riding and not driving will have the ability to disable this feature. This sounds familiar, Audrey, right?
Yes, it does. Because isn't it exactly what Waze has?
Yeah. You know, thing, right?
Yeah, where you're not allowed to, you know, put in a new location and they'll ask you if you're a passenger or if you're a driver. But then again, you know, how many of us have actually just clicked on passenger while we were driving just because we needed to, you know, we are lost and we needed to find...
Oh, not me.
The directions.
I abide by all the laws.
Of course you do. Look at this grin on his face right now.
I never do that. Come on.
No, so it just makes it redundant, right? If you're not really going to follow the rules.
Yeah.
But I guess I think this will work with like messages and stuff like that. Because if you're moving, if the iPhone is moving with you in your car and you don't get any notifications, I guess that helps the problem.
I mean, it's going to help people focus a little bit more, isn't it? Unless you get that those other people who are like, I haven't heard my phone in the last 10 minutes. I'm going to have to check it. That's, you know, another thing. But Nissan are taking it one step further, and they're proposing this idea of building a Faraday cage, effectively, around the car.
Yes, so it's basically a box built into the car that would block radio transmissions of any kind from reaching the phone, and that would be another way to prevent distracting texts while driving.
Awesome ideas. Of course, if you want to hear more about what Apple's got up their sleeves, do tune in on Thursday when I'm sure me and Jeff will be talking a little bit more about that. In the meantime, though, sorry, Audrey, did you want to say something?
No, it's time for the roundup.
It's time for the roundup. So we started off with Bill Gates may soon lose his spot as the world's richest person.
And then we moved into how working from home may actually hurt your career. Yeah.
And then, of course, can Theresa May use technology to stop terror attacks?
The hidden challenges of invisible disabilities.
And, of course, we just covered how the iPhones are introducing this feature that's about 5 years too late.
He had to have the last word.
I'm an Android guy, you know.
All right, and coming up after the 1 p.m. news, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. Chronology Asia Berhad was on the grill this morning. Chronology, of course, is a specialist on data protection and data loss. The Morning Run spoke to its group CEO, Philip Tan, on its interest in India's market while widening their presence in Southeast Asia and developing a transnational infrastructure across Asia for storage solutions.
From all of us here on Enterprise Biz Bytes, we'll be back tomorrow. You're, of course, listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. Goodbye, folks.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.